Friday means Eric Francis Fridays, brought to you by our friends at Hyatt Infinity. Lease the QX50 for $499 a month. You can find out how over at Hyatt Infinity, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane. We welcome the man to the program right now. The commercial legend, the new TV star joining us. It's Franchise. Eric Francis, how are you, buddy?
Yeah, I'm all right, buddy. That acting thing is not my bag. Patty Steinberg and I had some fun with it, but it's not. It reminds me of, remember when, and this will be the only time in my life I compare myself to Wayne Gretzky. You're too young to remember, but you may have seen the clips when he was on Days of Our Lives.
Yes.
And he was absolutely awful. That's the only comparison I'll make to Wayne Gretzky. Anyway, we had some fun doing those commercials.
And it's for a good cause, too, right? Like, let's be honest. The acting is what it is, but it's all for a good cause and getting some donations for the mayor's food drive there.
Yeah. We're encouraging people to go down to Hyatt Infinity and drop off non-perishable goods for the mayor's food drive. I mean, there's lots of places you can drop that stuff off in the city, but if you're ever around down by Luxury Lane, by the auto mall down there, just off Glenmore, then just drop by some food there. They'd really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Anytime you can get down to see our friends over at Hyatt Infinity, always a good time. Franchise, lots to get to. Nothing really specific, as you know, we're kind of in a lull in the sports world, but our parent company today with some interesting news out of the Globe and Mail, as a report coming out that maybe looking to do something new with that nice piece of land downtown Toronto, maybe demolish the Rogers Centre, put up a new stadium, and throw some condos, some office towers, all that sort of stuff. Hard to imagine. I didn't even realize until I was really looking at things that the Sky Dome went up back in 1989. That's well before my time. So the facility pretty old now, all things considered, when we see these new sports stadiums popping up left and right. But what did you make of that news today?
Well, it's fascinating because I grew up in Toronto, and I am old, as you alluded to earlier. Like, I was there the night it opened. I was there the night the Sky Dome opened. And for some of us, we still call it Sky Dome to this day. And it was billed as the entertainment, like, wonder of the world. It was considered, or at least billed, as maybe being the most incredible venue for sports or entertainment in the world. And I remember going opening night, and there were large portions of the stadium where people got soaked. The roof didn't close 100% perfectly, and there was a thunderstorm, and tons of people in all their VIP gala wear were getting drenched because there were leaks in the roof. And it really was symbolic of the fact that you could dub it as the world's greatest sporting venue, but at the end of the day, this thing is junk. And that's what it was really turned out to be over the years. It was built in 89, and those are $89, for $570 million. We're going to build a little, a humble, scaled-down hockey rink for $550 here in Calgary, hopefully in the next 3 or 4 years. And this thing was just one big, massive concrete slab. And, you know, it was shortly thereafter they put up Camden Yards in Baltimore. And I remember going on a road trip with buddies to go see that. And like, wow, what a difference. Like, that was a throwback to the old school ball yards, natural turf, the great outdoors, no roof. Just incredible. And from that, most of the stadiums from that point on were built like Camden Yards, with more of a nod to the intimacy and the fan friendliness of the building. The Sky Dome, Rogers Center, whatever you call it, is one big gray elephant. I think Rogers bought it for like $50 million when they bought it.
25 million in 04.
Yeah, like, because it was basically costing the previous owner too much money for all the bills involved.
Yeah.
And so this is probably long overdue. It shocked a lot of people because, you know, I don't think people knew how far along that Rogers and Brookfield are on this. They're a couple of years deep working with the different levels of government because the land is owned by the government.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the plan is to basically divide this in two parts. One would be a ballpark, and the other part would be the money-making part, the condos and the shops, and really also making that just a great place to go and watch a game. And like so many good arenas now, you know, they build around it a real entertainment center. So you go a couple hours before the game, have lunch, have drinks, and then after the game you loiter as well and have more fun. So I'm excited that this could happen. They're also talking about maybe just knocking it down and building a ballpark on the waterfront, which would be cool too. But either way, you know, you'd think a guy who grew up there going to games. I've been to World Series games, many World Series games at SkyDome. I know it's Rogers Center, but I'm just going to keep calling it SkyDome.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget they had a contest to name it in the Toronto Star when I was a kid. And it was, you know, the Condome. People wanted to call it the Condome, more because it was a big con job by the government. At the time, it was considered, you know, somebody wanted to call it the Big O, as in O-W-E, because the government owed so much money on it, and it went so over budget that people were furious. And I also remember, and I'll stop rambling about it, but I remember my father being vehemently opposed to this whole thing. And I could never understand as a kid why anyone would be opposed to building a world-class facility for sports and entertainment and all this other stuff. And then I grew up and had to start paying taxes myself, and I realized that it's not that simple. It's not just, oh, it's free, let's build it, it's great for our city. There's a price tag attached to everything, and when you become a taxpayer, you realize there's a whole other side of the coin. And we saw that in Calgary when that debate raged on for several years over the new arena here. So anyway, lots of history. I'm not sad that it's getting knocked down or that it sounds like it's going to get knocked down. I'd love a big, new, better facility because I think a city like Toronto deserves it. A world-class city like Toronto deserves it, just like Calgary deserved a world-class facility in whatever our new arena is going to be here.
It's funny you say that you won't be sad to see it go, because there's a corresponding piece that another author did in the Globe and Mail, and it was more of an opinion piece, but it was titled "Good Riddance, Rogers Centre." You had your moment. I thought that was a fitting sort of representation. I haven't seen a whole lot for some of the moments that have been there, and the World Series, and even, you know, going back to the playoff runs, the bat flip, all that sort of stuff that happened there. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of, you know, like usually when these, I mean, we're talking about a stadium that's the seventh oldest in baseball franchise. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of people that are sentimental about this place. It's certainly by no means, you know, in baseball, the history of stadiums, it's no Wrigley, it's no Fenway. For it to be that old, nobody really seems to be all that sad about this place going.
Isn't that interesting? Like, it's a good point that you make, because, you know, when Maple Leaf Gardens went, I remember flying back to Toronto to go to the final game at Maple Leaf Gardens. Like, it was that special place.
And that'll probably happen in this city too, won't it?
Yeah, yeah, I think people will want to be part of it. And it'll be a big, sad farewell in Calgary to the Saddledome for sure, because it's still a world-class structure. I know that it's antiquated inside, but that it's such an iconic part of our skyline more than anything. And, yeah, so many incredible things happen there. And when we're all younger, we all have memories of going there as a kid. And it's funny because, like, when I go to Maple Leaf Gardens, I go there with my dad. And I have such fond memories of being there with my dad, watching the old Maple Leafs, Rick Vive, Mike Palmateer, blah, blah, blah. But I didn't realize as a kid that the place was just a rat-infested dump. And when you walk through the stairwells to get out at the end of the game, like, it was filled with smoke. I mean, there was smoking in there. And it was gross. It was dirty, as I remember. And that's how a lot of people remember. But it doesn't matter. There's so many memories in there. SkyDome is, like I said earlier, a big slab of concrete. And it was, you know, at the time it was so amazing because the roof could close in like 17 minutes or whatever the number was. And that was, I think, one of the first retractable roofs in the world for a big stadium. And that was what made everyone go, wow, that's amazing. But at the end of the day, it is still a very, it's not a warm place. And I think back to places like old Tiger Stadium I went to, and Fenway Park, and these old parks that everybody idolizes and remember, because they were intimate and they were cozy. This is not. This is a massive expanse of concrete. And, yeah. You know, it's funny. I just, as I'm thinking about all these memories, I watched a man die at the Sky Dome years ago. One of the most bizarre days of my life, I was covering a Stamps game. Stamps versus Doug Flutie and the Argos, and it was the first game that Flutie was playing against the Stampeders since he left Calgary. And I went to Toronto, and I did the pre-game, like the day before, and you go and chat with Flutie, and I always liked Doug, and it was always good to talk to him, and he wanted to tell me all about his new album. He loved drumming more than he loved quarterbacking, I think. there was a guy who was assembling a wire that would go from one end of the stadium to the other, and it was laying on the field, on the sideline, and his shtick was whenever the Argos got a touchdown, he would zip line across it and throw little mini footballs to the crowd. And he was just anchoring this wire and then was just going to raise it up to, how many stories. And anyway, I went up to my room and I was staying at Skydome Hotel, which was a big deal. We always remember Roberto Alomar lived there, and that also had some history too. And you could see the stadium from your room. Obviously we all know that. And all of a sudden he was testing it, and I hear him kind of scream like, "Yoo-hoo!" And about midway across, I think he realized, and I realized watching it, that the wire was not secure. And instead of going across at, just a slight angle, he was going down at like a 90-degree angle.
Cool.
And he smashed into the concrete, like the field, and was unconscious and was kind of dangling from this rope like 15 feet above.
Cool.
And there was only like a couple people in the stadium at the time. I ran down. I ended up giving police statements. I remember the Toronto Sun interviewed me. I was on the front page of the Toronto Sun. Sun man witnesses death plunge. anyway, it was ridiculous. But just a bizarre memory that just popped into my head. So many memories. Joe Carter's home run. And everyone knows what I'm talking about when I say that. Like, it just great memories. But still, the building was not. It wasn't the building. It was the things that happened in it. As that article said, it had its moments, but it didn't have much of a charm.
No, it certainly didn't. And I think that even if someone's been there sporadically throughout my life, it's a neat place to go. It's the home of the Jays, but it's never wowed the way that anything else that some of the other icons in the industry have. And if you're not going to be an icon, a Fenway, a Wrigley, or Maple Leaf Gardens or something, you should at least be up to date and up to standard and modern and all that sort of stuff. And we know that Rogers Center or Skydome certainly doesn't present any of those features to it. So we're talking to Eric Francis. Eric Francis Fridays here, brought to you by our friends at Hyatt Infinity, Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. Your latest article up at sportsnet.ca franchise, you had a good chat with the head coach, Jeff Ward, as he gets ready for whenever the hell training camp's going to wind up being this year. And funny enough, it seems as though he's going to try to continue on the lessons and the teachings that he started to implement in really what was his first training camp, the return to play training camp, and keeping everyone responsible defensively is going to be a big key for him going forward.
Yeah, and it sounds cliche to say that, he watched the Tampa Bay Lightning do what they did, and they obviously had to buy into, okay, we don't have to win games 9-1. We have to win games 2-1. And all that talent on Tampa Bay was nothing unless they started to play more defensive hockey first and foremost. And it worked. It finally worked. And he needs his team here in Calgary. He wants to impress upon them how they have to buy in as a group to play smart, defensive first hockey. And he thinks from that, they'll create more offensive chances. So, the big question is how can Johnny Gaudreau contribute in that new framework where it's defense first? And they're not going to ask Johnny Gaudreau to play, they don't ever want him to hit anybody. But be on the right side of the puck. Don't turn the puck over at the opposing blue line.
Don't bleed chances, right?
Yeah. Just be more sound defensively. And the coach sure thought Gaudreau was really good at that against Winnipeg in the playoffs and the play-in. But not as good. I don't think anyone thought he was very good against Dallas. So we've seen signs that he can do that. And I think that Johnny Gaudreau will almost be symbolic of whether or not the entire team can buy into this new mantra. And you got to give Jeff Ward credit. Like, he implemented a brand new style of play for the playoffs and it worked. Like, that's amazing for a team to grasp this concept And I thought it was interesting. He said that during the pause, he sent out a ton of video and instructional videos for the guys to break down and look at as to how he wants his team to play once they return from the pandemic. And again, that's high risk to try something radical and new. And it worked. The combination of the high intensity and the defense first, Calgary Flames looked very, very good in the playoffs up until their final game. And you know, I think he wants them to play exactly the way they played in the playoffs and continue that on. Obviously, the intensity can't be the same because the playoffs are a different animal. But the defensive style, and the whole reason I asked him about it was, now that you've got a world-class goalie, will it change your style? And he said, not much. We wanted to go to a more defensive style anyway, but the goalie will sure help us be even more defensively sound.
And it was interesting, too, because one of the words that he used and was brought up in the article, too, was that physicality, too, that came along with that attention to detail and that, you know, being physical, being hard on the puck, being hard to play against in general. And it was interesting that they brought that up because I thought that played so well, especially for that line of Sam Bennett, Dylan Dubé, and Milan Lucic. And if you can get, I mean, God, 30% of that, of what those guys played like in the playoffs on a night-to-night basis in the regular season, we're talking about a completely different team, even out of Bennett, period. If he can bring that sort of thing to a nightly basis for the Flames, we're talking about a different-looking team.
I agree, but, you know, I remember after Michael Ferland made his playoff debut a handful of years ago and he was a wrecking ball, he came back the next year and, like Sam Bennett, we wondered, could he translate that into, you know, the same physicality during the season? And Ferland said, I want to try to average up to 5 hits a night. Well, I think in the history of hockey, no one's ever averaged 5 hits a night if you look at the stats. And Michael Ferland has been broken down as a player ever since. And you know, he realized soon thereafter he couldn't try to maintain that physicality. But the point is, you know, his desire to try and play that over an 82-game schedule is just not reasonable to ask someone to do that. And you know, even if we have a 48-game schedule this year, it's still not reasonable to ask a guy to go balls to the wall every single game. We as fans would love it. And I think the guy who could figure it out and do it would end up getting a $5 or $6 million contract the next time he needed a deal. But it's just not reasonable. And that kind of explains how Sam Bennett's not been as effective a player during the regular season compared to the playoffs. Because in the playoffs, he says, screw it. I'm going to put my body in harm's way every single game. And it's paid off for him. But during the season, you can't really do it. So, yeah, the physicality won't be there. You can't ask a team to be physical all season long. You'd love them to be. And you can also be a lot more physical than they usually are, but it's just it's a fine line. It's a balancing act in terms of physicality and intensity.
What's on the docket this weekend for your franchise? I'm sure you've already got your $50 in to watch Mike Tyson and Roy Jones fight on Saturday.
I want to see that.
I
really do. And again, the old guy and me, I still remember the days when Mike Tyson was the baddest man on the planet.
Oh.
There's a small part of me that wants to buy it, not $50 worth.
Yeah,
wants to buy it, but I do. I would like to watch it, but I guess I'll probably be content to watch it.
See, and that's just
a week later when it's free.
And it's not even an old guy, a young guy thing here. But see, to me, as a guy that's never really had those boxing moments or never really bought into boxing as a sport, I can't even believe that we're having this conversation about those two fighting on Saturday, let alone the fact that apparently they're not going to try to knock each other out or anything like that. And to spend $50 on that, to me, and don't get me wrong, I appreciate everything that Mike Tyson was and the legend that he is, but I can't even imagine wanting to watch that on Saturday. What's that going to be like? Are these guys even going to be able to hit each other for 10 rounds?
It's funny you said that. That is so generational, though. You know, I long for the days when there was a fight coming up. You knew 4 months out and you were excited about it. When Muhammad Ali, I go back to even those days, but Muhammad Ali or Tyson, you know, I long for those days. And I would love for a heavyweight to matter again and be that guy. But that sport, you're right, in the eyes of a whole generation, that sport is not nowhere near the radar. And that's too bad because it can be a great, great sport and a great spectacle more than anything else. But maybe that's all I'm thinking of is, you know, I want this to be a spectacle like the old days. And in its own way, it could be a spectacle, but an aging, bloated, spectacle that you know, it's probably gonna let us down. But I still long for those days when they mattered, those matches.
You never let us down on Friday's franchise. We appreciate it, man. Another edition brought to you by our friends at Hyatt Infinity. Enjoy the weekend, pal. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, buddy. Cheers.
Take care. There you go. Eric Francis, Hyatt Infinity. Eric Francis, Fridays every week here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.